Field is in the stretch in the Belmont Stakes, and Arcangelo has now taken over. Arcangelo is in front. National Treasure back running in second. Then Hit Show, Tampa Trice, Forte, and Angel of Empire. It is Arcangelo with the lead. Arcangelo in front, trying to hold on for the final 50 yards.
I want to be a part of it. New York.
The Races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
The Triple Crown started with a bit of a nightmare at Churchill Downs and ended with a dream. What a great conclusion to the Triple Crown with the win by Arcangelo in the Belmont Stakes last weekend. We'll have the complete replay of the race call, as we do for all the Triple Crown races from start to finish. And just a little bit, want to thank everyone for spending some time with us on Off to the Races this morning. Happy Father's Day weekend to all the dads and sires across the country here, and of course here in Virginia. On today's show, we'll speak with the winning trainer, history being made in the Belmont Stakes. We'll see what Jenna Antonucci thinks about her new title as the first female trainer to win the Belmont Stakes. She may think a little or a lot about that. We'll get her impressions about that in about 15 minutes or so. Frank Hoff is the senior director of racing at Colonial Downs, and he's making his journey to Virginia to in preparations for the meet that starts July 13th. Frank will join us in about 5 minutes or so here on Off to the Races. Frank Vespi is living the dream, and he'll speak with Alan Foreman. He spoke with him earlier this week. We have that on tape, and get an idea of what is happening up in Maryland as they try to solidify the future of racing in Maryland, and Alan Foreman will play a big role on that, and Frank will talk to him in a little bit. And of course, Derby Bill, last leg of the show. There are four stakes races at Monmouth today. There is a Grade 2 stakes race at Belmont Park today, and he'll be excited about Royal Ascot that starts this week. So the focus switches from the Triple Crown to racing at Royal Ascot and racing at Colonial Downs as the meet opens again July 13th. Let's go back to last week, though. The call on the race on Fox, Tom Durkin, a lot was made of that, and then you couldn't hear him. Just sort of lousy audio, background noise, and for whatever reason, the crowd noise, the hoof noise, just sort of drowned Tom out in his comeback to calling races on the national network. So John Embrielle called it in-house for the Naira feed. Here's how he saw, from gate to wire, the 2023 Belmont Stakes.
And they're off in the 155th Belmont Stakes. National Treasure is right out for the lead. Hit Show came away well on the outside, and Forte is up close. Right alongside is Angel of Empire, who will be widest of all into the turn. Down at the rail is Tappa Choose. So it is the Preakness winner, National Treasure, challenged here on the inside by Tappa Choose, and they are right together. Then it's the trio of Arcangelo, Forte, and Hit Show. On the outside is Angel of Empire. At the rail is Il Miracolo. Then comes Tappa Trice, who has one horse beaten at this point, and that is Red Route 1, who trails the field. The opening quarter mile in 23 3/5 seconds as the field moves for the backstretch. National Treasure leads here by 3/4 of a length. Hit Show on the outside. Tappa Choose down at the rail. They're right together, second and third. Angel of Empire in the clear on the outside in fourth. Forte is fifth, but just 3 lengths from the front. Arcangelo is now moving up a spot. Then we come back to Tappa Trice and Il Miracolo. Red Route 1 continues to trail in ninth. Opening half, 47 3/5 seconds. And they're midway up the Belmont backstretch with National Treasure still the leader here. National Treasure by a length. Tapachews is down at the rail. Hitshow is in third, 2.5 lengths from the lead. Arcangelo now looking to split horses from fourth. Then comes Angel of Empire. And Tapatrice now makes a big move on the extreme outside. Tapatrice and Angel of Empire, they're moving as a team, going after the front runner, National Treasure. So it is National Treasure. But right behind, Tapatrice, Angel of Empire, Hitshow, and Arcangelo down at the rail. It's another three lengths back to Forte. The mile went in 1:37.2. National Treasure challenged here on the inside by Arcangelo, and the two of them are heads apart. Tapatrice on the outside in third. Angel of Empire being asked for more. Then comes Hitshow and Forte with Il Miracolo. The field is in the stretch in the Belmont Stakes, and Arcangelo has now taken over. Arcangelo is in front. National Treasure back running in second. Then Hitshow, Tapatrice, Forte, and Angel of Empire. It is Arcangelo with the lead. Arcangelo in front, trying to hold on for the final 50 yards, and it's Arcangelo to win the test of the champion. It is Arcangelo, and it is a monumental victory for trainer Jenna Antonucci. And what a month for jockey Javier Castellano. He won his first Derby with Mage. He wins his first Belmont Stakes with Arcangelo.
Yeah, nice win by Arcangelo. Comes out of the Peter Pan, similar to Tonalist back in 2014, and wins the Belmont Stakes. The odds for the Belmont Stakes pretty much stayed to form with the morning line. That was something that didn't bounce around it like we saw Preakness Week and even with the Derby. The time of the race, 2:29.23 on the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's Belmont Stakes. His record was never in jeopardy. 5 seconds, over 5 seconds slower than Secretariat's Belmont. So that tells you how impressive that race was. Just a brilliant ride by Javier Castellano coming through on the rail. Even though Forte was making a move late, Arcangelo was clearly the best horse, got a great ride. Javier Castellano checks his Kentucky Derby box, now he checks his Belmont Stakes box, and congratulations to the Connections on that win. We do have Jenna Antonucci here in about 5 or 10 minutes or so on Off to the Races. Right now, we want to speak with Frank Hoff, who is the Senior Director of Racing at Colonial Downs, making his way from Texas to Virginia. And he joins us now on Off to the Races. Part of the preparations of the meet and for the summer is moving the family to Virginia. Frank, good morning. And what state are you in this morning?
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I'm in Auburn, Alabama, about ready to pack up the car and get up to Richmond.
How about that? Making the journey, what, from Texas, is that right?
Yeah, coming from Houston. Left yesterday, got here last night, and looking forward to getting back to Richmond this evening, hopefully.
It's kind of like our version of carpool karaoke. Speaking earlier, Larry Rivelli, we interviewed last year on Off to the Races as he was making his trip from Chicago to Virginia, and turned out that a little horse by the name of Two Phils did real well at Colonial Downs for him, ended up being leading trainer of the meet, and so hopefully you'll not that you're in the same venue as Larry, but hopefully you'll have that kind of success making the journey across the country. What are your coming from Sam Houston Racetrack, which if there's a racetrack in Texas that is known for turf racing, it would absolutely be Sam Houston. What are your thoughts coming from Sam Houston to Colonial Downs? What are your impressions of the facility so far?
Yeah, so obviously, I think the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Colonial Downs is that turf course, and it is fantastic. It looks great. I was spoiled coming from Houston that, you know, obviously we took a lot of pride in our surfaces, especially the Conley turf course, but I can say that both those courses look great, and I think it's going to be a fantastic season. Looking forward to seeing all the turf races that are going to be offered and ran at Colonial this season.
It's been an interesting comeback for Colonial. 2019 was the restoration of racing in Virginia. 2020 was bit of a disaster with the COVID year and the outbreak that eventually ended the meet, storms, power outages, certainly a lot of challenges for your predecessor, Jill Byrne. And then 2021, they were rebuilding the turf course or the courses at Churchill. So a lot of the Churchill horsemen came out here. Last year, it was the lack of racing in Illinois that brought a lot of Arlington horsemen to Colonial Downs. And now this year, with the new ownership of Colonial Downs, now owned by Churchill Downs, and sort of a change with Stanley Shina becoming the racing secretary, a new cast of leadership with a new ownership group. What are your thoughts, goals, anticipations for the meet this year? What do you think Churchill maybe brings to the equation? And what are you looking forward to this summer?
Yeah, I'm excited coming up here. There's a lot of excitement with the Arlington Million, the Secretariat, and the Beverly D being the new homes at Colonial Downs. It's pretty rare to get graded races as it is, let alone two grade ones and a grade two. So that's exciting, and I think we're going to continue to build on all the work that the team has done since it reopened in 2019. As we continue to go, it's just building national interest, and I'm sorry, getting some feedback there. Just natural getting some national attention, getting some more horsemen to come here, build the Virginia breeding program. So just a lot of things, just trying to make Colonial Downs a place that people want to come in the summertime. And have success, and just continue to build as we look to add more race days to the racing schedule.
Yeah, be sure to tip your driver there. It looks like she's taking care of you this morning on the way in. I see that you're a Montana alum, a big fan of the Grizzlies. What do you, tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe your background and experience and what you hope to bring personally to Colonial Downs this summer.
Yeah, so my dad worked in oil, so we moved around, born in Houston, lived in Wyoming, back to Houston, grew up in Seattle. That's actually where I got into horse racing, was going to Emerald Downs. They built it, the track in the town that I was growing up in. Went over to the University of Montana, graduated, head back into Houston. So I ended up working a little bit for the Astros as part-time work, and then it was time to find a full-time job and stop by Sam Houston Race Park and filled out an application, got a job. And 20 years later, I left as the assistant general manager. So kind of held a whole bunch of roles at Sam Houston from every department almost. So really the big thing, what I like to do here is just to continue to build the fan experience as well. We've got a lot of things planned this season, with the new schedule, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 1:30. We're going to try to let families come out on Saturdays with some activities, and we've got a new food service provider that's going to offer a lot more options for the fans that come out this year and join us. So, yeah, just really trying to build the experience for the fans, the horsemen, and our staff as well. We want to make sure that everyone who works at Colonial and comes to Colonial has a real good time and wants to come back. So those are probably my primary goals, and obviously, just have a good season and get ready for 2024.
One of the things in Colonial's five-year plan was to bring more on-track attendance to racing. You mentioned the move to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, which will certainly be friendly, more friendlier for fans to come out. And then with Churchill, if there's anybody that can handle and has expertise in the big racing day, it's certainly Churchill Downs. With obviously with the biggest day in racing with the Kentucky Derby. What do you think? Are Colonial's challenges and assets, moving forward?
I think, just as we look, is just how the new schedule works and, presenting ourselves, to the fans, the local fans, but also to the horse players around the country, moving to a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you're certainly introducing yourself to a new audience of horse players, especially with Saratoga. and Mammoth, and even Delmore later in the day. Obviously we're going to work hard to get ourselves in front of those customers and make sure they enjoy what betting offerings that we have at Colonial. And as we look down the road, obviously we're hoping that we're going to continue to build in popularity, and so that means you have to look at how you get more horses on property, and is that look to be stalls, dorms, as we're talking about the Arlington Million and attracting international horses, we're starting to have some conversations on what that looks like and how that, all the things that work to get horses in from Ireland and England over to Colonial and hopefully stay for the season and really build the product. So a lot of exciting challenges, I'll put it, but I think certainly everything that's been there, the infrastructure's there, so I think everything's going to be in a good footing, and just looking forward to being a part of what's to come here at Colonial Downs.
We did learn of our first probable for the Secretariat Stakes this week. Todd Pletcher indicating that Major Dude may be a candidate for the Secretariat Stakes. That would be a great beginning for that race to be held at Colonial. Frank, we'll let you get back to the navigating there, and safe travels as you come up from the southeast, and looking forward to catching up with you in New Kent this summer.
I appreciate it, and you guys have a good day.
Great. Frank Hoft, new senior director of racing at Colonial Downs, on his way up through the south this morning on Off to the Races, headed for Colonial Downs, and looking forward to that meet as well. Just taking a quick look here at the racing weather in TV as we reach out for Jenna Antonucci here. In New York, it's got high temperature, 78 degrees, just the smallest chance of a thunderstorm, less than 15%. Also at Mammoth today, the same thing, just down the shore, 15%, just the smallest chance of a thunderstorm. So great conditions for racing. And now on Off to the Races, we have the winning trainer of the Belmont Stakes, Holly Sought, this week. Boy, has her life changed in a week. Jenna Antonucci now joining us on Off to the Races. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for spending some time with us on Off to the Races, and just a great win. I didn't really appreciate how big this win was for your barn until I went back and looked at your previous wins and record, and not to diminish what you did in the past, but I just didn't appreciate how big this win was for you, for your career. How impactful has this been, and how has your life changed in the last week?
Well, thanks for having me on this morning. It's been a great experience, and just so grateful for all the opportunity, and grateful for the horse and our team to be able to go through this together, and it's been wonderful, obviously. And I think probably the parts that you wouldn't think about beforehand at all is just the amount of positiveness, and just from not even just racing people, from general people and whatnot, of what our win has meant for them and in their lives. And that's been such a gift. And I'm always so humbled when people share those stories with us.
We played a clip at the beginning of the radio show that showed the complete running of the Belmont Stakes. I'm going to play two here sort of real close. First is just John Embriel's call of the Belmont Stakes. Let's listen to this now. This is what it sounded like in the grandstand.
It is Arcangelo with the lead. Arcangelo in front, trying to hold on for the final 50 yards. And it's Arcangelo to win the test of the champion. It is Arcangelo, and it is a monumental victory for trainer Jenna Antonucci.
That's what it sounded like in the grandstand, but here is what it sounded like in the box for the connections of Arcangelo.
Go buy him now. Yes! Yes! Go buy him now! Come on, horse! Come on, buddy! Come on, buddy, run! Come on, Bobby! Pick him up! Come on, Javi! Come on! Javi, come on!
fair, to be fair, that is not just Jenna Antonucci in the box. She may have been the loudest, but she wasn't the only one cheering. When you see that horse, and you're looking back between the track and the TV monitor, you know, what was going through your mind in about those 20 seconds?
We obviously had a plan, you know, that you can usually always throw out the window when you go in the starting gate. But, you know, we had talked, obviously, with some different scenarios and fully expected that we'd be taking the outside route. And we wanted to get a jump on the field, understanding what our cruising speed was and just kind of what makes Arcangelo a bit dynamic and who he is, with just such a long, sustained run at a pretty nice cruising speed that if we could get the jump on him, they'd have to come back and run around us, basically. And so to watch all the pieces kind of come together and the rail open up the way that it did, and, you know, all of a sudden everything you've kind of hoped or thought about and talked about leading up to it, it's like, oh my God, it's happening. You're getting the inside trip in this race, not just any race. You know, cutting that corner, just, you know, those things don't always happen, as everybody knows. So watching that happen was just kind of, you know, we knew we'd range up. We knew we'd be, you know, all of that was kind of what we had anticipated. And then to watch him kick away and just Javier ride smart down the stretch and put him out in front of the horses late stretch, literally that they'd have to run around him to get by him. And it's just the flood of, you know, holy crap, this is happening, you know, in that last 20 seconds.
Yeah, we had Javier Castellano on the show after he won the Kentucky Derby with Mage, and he it was the Saturday after the show, which was the Peter Pan Stakes. So that was after he had become gotten a win for you. You mentioned, we talked about the last, you know, 45 seconds or so of the race, but for Arcangelo coming into this race, when did you know this horse was really becoming special? Kind of, he was like a rapidly developing storm in the Triple Crown. When did you sense, you know, yeah, this horse really has some talent, we should run him in this race?
You know, for the public, he's become a rapid development. For us, we've put so much into him before we started running that it's just been a progression with him since, you know, since he came down to us as, you know, just newly broke, and we finished breaking him, to knowing we were waiting and waiting on this horse to run and letting him grow up at Saratoga last summer. So it's just kind of been a progressive, I understand how it looks like he's just coming on the scene now, but we've been on this journey already, you know, for quite some time. And I think people's heads got picked up with his maiden win, the numbers that he picked up there and how he did it. It just seemed things really kind of clicked for him in the afternoon when he just leveled off and got low, deep stretch, and just kind of kept accelerating. And so I think for us, you know, avoiding or bypassing some of the allowance spots, that experience probably happened in his two prior trips with having, you know, some troubled trips and not clear running room and those kinds of things. So he was able to get some good race seasoning in the afternoons through those experiences that we just felt warranted the opportunity to take that next step up. And yes, I mean, I'm aware we skipped some normal traditional progressive races to take the swing at the Peter Pan, but really there was no reason not to if he was what we were hoping he wanted to be. And so that's how we got to the Peter Pan. And it obviously being the traditional prep race for the Belmont, just wanted to continue to give the horse the breathing room to say yay or nay as we went down, having the Belmont as the number one spot on our radar, just to work towards that direction if it happened all the right way.
Part of your development of your training career went through Dwayne Lucas's barn. So with a monumental win like this, I'm going to pull in another basketball coach for my next question here, and that's Coach John Thompson, who won the 1984 National Championship with his Georgetown Hoyas. And his response, I think, is very similar to the way I've heard you refer to being the first female to win, a female trainer to win the Belmont Stakes, which ironically fell on the 30th anniversary of Julie Crone's win as a jockey. John Thompson implied that being the first black coach to win a national championship was almost as an insult because it involved the lack of opportunity of black coaches. It implied that a black coach could not win a national championship until 1984. It's almost surprising to me that a female trainer hasn't had the opportunity, because there are so many women that are talented in training horses. It definitely seems to even be sort of a wave of the future. Is that how you could characterize your win as the first female trainer? You'll wear that title as the first female trainer to win the Belmont Stakes, but it certainly doesn't imply that there are female horsemen out there capable of winning Triple Crown races, don't you think?
It's a title that I'm known for not liking titles and boxes, right? I don't want to be placed in this box or have that one title, and it's something I've always led my life that way. And I understand what it means, and I understand what it means to other people. And for that, I don't take it lightly. It doesn't define how I've gotten there. I've had, you know, I've worked my butt off, as do every other horse person on the backside. And, I think there's been other very nice horses that have been purchased out of barns, that may have been trained by women. And, you know, I think the industry hopefully is becoming less lazy in how they choose their trainers. And if it's female or male, that allows the middle of the industry to have more opportunity and to continue to develop horses in their barn, even if bigger owners or other owners with deeper pockets want to get involved, that you don't just gut somebody's program because you want to go do something you're comfortable with. And so often growth makes people uncomfortable and change makes people uncomfortable, and that's fine, and that's something we need to embrace and encourage people to be more brave in their decisions and be okay being wrong and allow everything to grow for horsemen that deserve it. I mean, it's, you can walk on the backside and see who runs a good program. You can see how well their horses look. One thing I think we've always been proud of is we may not have had the fanciest of horses, but if they left our program because they were claimed or whatnot, they never went and ran on to become the next coming of something. You know, we've always really been very proud of getting the most out of every horse we had, and that was always my commitment to doing this industry, was however many came through my hands, we were going to steward the best possible scenario and success from each and every one of those. So, you know, I've been a big one on carrying the flag of, I think win percentages kill the sport more than it does help it, because you are trying to dumb it down and put people on the same comparison where, you know, we're not comparing like products. You're not comparing like businesses. And by doing so, we just continue to hurt ourselves.
How many other trainers are there like you out there? Trainers that, small operations, maybe not with the biggest resumes. How many do you think are out there like you?
Most.
Yeah. Most, and maybe nobody like you as well. Want to give you just one more question here, and then we'll let you go. And we appreciate you spending some time with us, Jen Antonucci, who is the winning trainer with Arcangelo's win in the Belmont Stakes. I'm going to reference another basketball coach who is Jim Valvano. The year before, in 1983, when NC State was rolling through and gaining popularity, he really relished the moment. He didn't want to hide his team. He loved the fact that they were holding pep rallies for the team. How has this week been for you? Have you been trying to go out and embrace this, or are you trying to shy away a little bit from what just had to be a media storm?
I'm not much of a shy away kind of personality. You know, I the quote that came out of us, out of me, that after the race, you know, is I think very much a fabric of who I am, where, you know, you got to create opportunity and do it. Luck, I'm a firm believer luck isn't just lucky. It's you create luck and you create opportunity. And so we've absolutely embraced this week. I've been so immensely grateful to those that have wanted to hear our story and hear about our sport. And, you know, the national audience, it's been great. It's, you know, I've talked to people in New Zealand, and so it's been crazy from that regard. But obviously, to have the opportunity or to even be considered to be an ambassador for what we do in this sport, and to try and help pivot the narrative that can hang over us is an honor. And you know, we will continue to do what we do, surround ourselves with great people. With great people comes great things.
Absolutely. That quote, if you can't find a seat at the table, make your own table. That's the quote that Jenna was referring to earlier. Well, thank you. We appreciate you spending some time with us on Off to the Races this morning, and enjoy the seat at the table that you made.
Thank you. I'm grateful.
Great. Jenna Antonucci joining us on Off to the Races. When we come back on Off to the Races, heading into break, we'll Frank Vespi speaks with Alan Foreman, and we'll catch up on the status of racing in Maryland. You're listening to Off to the Races, powered by theracingbiz.com.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to Colonial Downs this summer starting July 13th. Catch all the action on Colonial Downs' nationally renowned Secretariat Turf Course every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Post time is 1:30 p.m. Colonial Downs Racetrack is open to all ages. Parking and general admission are free. Reserve grandstand seats start at just $5. Get your tickets today at Ticketmaster.com.
Virginia's horse racing and horse breeding industry is built on the talent, skills, labors, and passions of incredible people working in all parts of the Commonwealth. Horses fuel the economy, power tourism, reinforce agriculture, and create jobs. From farmers to blacksmiths, trainers to vets, and racehorse staff to surrounding businesses, the local horse racing and breeding industry alone supports 5,300 jobs and has an overall impact of $542 million annually. Over 5,400 horses are owned by Virginians, and another 2,400 out-of-state horses are boarded at Virginia farms. Last year, over $4 billion was wagered on horse racing in Virginia. Learn more about this thriving agribusiness at virginiahorseracing.com. And be sure to enjoy the Colonial Downs Summer Thoroughbred Racing Season in New Kent, which runs from July 13th through September 9th, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 1:30.
Live racing at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races rolls on every Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern through March 1st, and every Thursday through Saturday through the month of October. Mark your calendars for Friday, August 25th, for the 15th renewals of the Grade 2 $1 million Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 $750,000 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest three-year-old filly sprint stakes race in North America. So come see us here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Learn more at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com.
And we're back live on Off to the Races. Maryland Governor Wes Moore announced this week appointments to the Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority. One of those appointments is Alan Foreman, who comes from the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. They're charged with the development and updating of a plan and execution of that plan for solutions for Maryland's racing situation. That really sort of began at Laurel. Here's what Frank's interview with Alan Foreman, how he addresses the problem at Laurel and Maryland in general.
There are a host of problems with respect to Laurel, which forced us to look at other options. And there's been a lot of discussion, I know, about the Pimlico becoming the hub of Maryland racing, building a training facility. But that's all spelled out in the Stadium Authority's report that they filed with the General Assembly on December 31st. If anyone had taken the time to read it, they would see it. And it's not something that's just been sprung on everyone in the last 60 days.
No, I think that's right. I mean, it's been clear for a while that Maryland was going to, essentially have to get down to one track, kind of slim down for financial and economic reasons. And now politically, the politics are sort of behind Pimlico. But that, as you say, that seems like to me it poses a whole host of other challenges, including that Pimlico is not big enough to host all the horses and horsemen that you need to have year-round racing.
I mean, that's the principal problem. To the extent that, look, the original concept plan contemplated that Pimlico was going to get redeveloped, but also redeveloped as a commercial zone for the redevelopment of the Park Heights area in Baltimore City, and that racing was going to be consolidated at Laurel. In fact, what even got that going was an effort by the Strana Group to essentially close Pimlico and move racing to Laurel and build a super track at Laurel. You know, unfortunately, we now know that the feasibility of that project is very much challenged. And so, you know, Pimlico is going to get new racing surfaces, a new grandstand. And so I think at least people were suggesting that, well, you have these racing these new racing surfaces, new grandstand at Pimlico. They're going to be sitting, you know, 10, 11 months a year. Wouldn't it be more feasible if you have to downsize to use Pimlico as your hub? We realize that it's not big enough to do that. You can't bring 1,400 horses up to Pimlico. You don't have sufficient housing for backstretch workers. You don't have the infrastructure. How do you make that work? And so the idea was, well, let's look at Pimlico and maybe look at a training center. It's been a challenge just to look at developing the training center portion of it. And now when you see what's happened to Churchill, where they've had to shut the meet down, they have options in Kentucky to move to other racetracks. We don't if we're going to downsize to just Pimlico. So there are a host of issues, challenges, options that are going to be in the lap of the authority. And that's precisely what the authority is going to be looking at, is what's best, and it should be the mandate. What is best for Maryland racing going forward? We don't have gaming, and we're not going to have gaming at our facilities. Our revenue stream is different than our neighboring states. And what can we best do with the revenue stream that we have available to us to make Maryland still a showplace for racing that conducts year-round racing?
Talking with Alan Foreman, General Counsel of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association and newly appointed member of the Maryland Racetrack Operating Authority. Popped into my head while you were saying, you know, Churchill has had these problems and had to shift over to Ellis Park, and what would we do in Maryland if we were down to just Pimlico? And the big T, here we come, right?
The entire industry is in a different place today than it was prior to the Derby Week. Not dissimilar to the way we felt after the crisis at Santa Anita, and to some extent 10 years ago when we had the problems at Aqueduct. We're very severely challenged in the public eye right now. The media is not giving us any slack. They are questioning, and I'm talking about non-racing media, but they're questioning whether we should have the social license to continue our business. And so all of this, we're under the microscope. We had this very problem when we did the redevelopment plan that was enacted by the General Assembly, and we spent a substantial amount of time defending our industry to the Maryland General Assembly. And those who read the Redevelopment Act will see that there are a lot of safety, health, safety, and welfare measures that are built into that plan. And I think we're going to be challenged again when whatever the authority comes up with to answer the questions of how does this best address the health, safety, and welfare of the horses? And is this plan in the long-term best interest of the state, given all that's going on right now?
Racing writ large has plenty of problems of its own as a sport, as an industry, in terms of, you know, really kind of losing the fight for the gambling dollar, in terms of shrinking fall crops, in terms of, as you just alluded to, health and safety and the social license to operate. I think that this operating authority is going to really need to be a force for thinking outside the box and for doing things differently and for really reimagining what Maryland racing is and can be.
I think you're absolutely right. But I felt that way when we did the concept plan, that we had a very unique opportunity and that we need to seize the opportunity because it may not come again. I feel even more strongly about that right now. I'm very concerned about the future of the industry. We have massive challenges. We have challenges with competition for the gambling dollar. We have challenges from competition from our neighboring states that are better positioned than we are But I have to tell you, there are only two racing jurisdictions in the United States that are looking to the future. One is New York with its massive redevelopment plan that just got approval from the state of New York with a $400 and some state loan that's going to facilitate the reconstruction of Belmont, and eventually Aqueduct will close and racing will move to Belmont on a full-time basis. And Maryland, with our redevelopment plan, you can't point to any other state in the country or jurisdiction where anybody's thinking about the future. So we have a unique opportunity, but to think that it's going to be status quo or it should be status quo, I think is a mistake. And I think that the challenge for the authority is to recognize where we are right now in the state of Maryland, where we are as an industry, and how we can best position the racing industry in Maryland to go forward and go forward with a bright future. It's a tremendous challenge. Remember, and I said it earlier, we will not have gaming at our racetracks. We're going to have to figure this out ourselves. We as an industry are going to have to figure this out ourselves, which is the challenge that we had 11 years ago when we had to come up with a solution when Frank Stronach didn't write the check for the slot license. And we were essentially told by the General Assembly, you all need to sit down and you need to come up with a plan that we can stand behind, but you're going to have to figure it out yourselves with the revenues that you have available to you and that we will make available to you through gaming. It's not going to come from anywhere else.
One of the challenges here, it seems to me, is you have this operating authority. It's going to be trying to envision the future and take over the redevelopment plan. We also have a track operator that still exists in First Racing, the Maryland Jockey Club /Stronach Group. How's that relationship going to work? Are they going to be here? Are they going to leave? How do you see the authority working with the current track operator?
So you know you've got your finger on the pulse of what's going on, Frank, because that's the reason why we have the authority, is that there were suggestions made to the General Assembly last year, which is how we got to where we are now, that the Stronach Group would be willing to reduce its footprint. How do you make that work? And that's when we started looking at this possibility of a public-private partnership, or a partnership with the state and the stakeholders in the industry who are really looking forward-thinking. The rub is that the Stronach Group wants to either keep Pimlico or redevelop Pimlico, but certainly the Preakness. And how do you make that work when you give the industry, you know, the issues and problems of the rest of the year, and they supposedly get, you know, the benefit of the Preakness? That is the challenge. And there are many who believe that it's irreconcilable, and that the only way this works is if the industry gets not only Laurel or Pimlico or whatever this new regime is going to look like, but also get the Preakness, because for decades, the Preakness helped to underwrite racing on a year-round basis. So you've asked the right question. Even if we come up with a concept plan, we're going to have to continue racing at Laurel for the foreseeable future until Pimlico gets done. And if it's a training center or whatever else is going to happen, gets done. So there's going to have to be some kind of a relationship. What that looks like, I don't know. The reason why we're on these six-month extensions, you know, as you know, and I know it became a bit of a controversy last week with the Racing Commission, we've been, we'll use the term subsidy, but we've been helping to underwrite racing in Maryland with the 10-year agreement, and that continues. And the question is, to what extent are the stakeholders, the horsemen and breeders who are paying the subsidy, willing to do it, and how much are they willing to commit going forward? Many of us believe that it would be better to take that money and plow it back into the industry, with the industry, in perhaps partnership with the state, controlling that, rather than paying it to an operator whose commitment to Maryland racing is certainly questionable. And that's a fair question. So those who say, well, why are you doing this extension? Why are you continuing to underwrite them? The alternative is they could shut down. They could have decided on July 1, we're not racing anymore. Is that in everybody's best interest? So, you know, those who are critical of what the MTHA and the horse breeders have done need to think about the fact that people were looking up to us to maintain, and we have to continue racing here until we figure this out. Otherwise, the barn areas are going to close. We're going to close down here, and of course, we're going to have to scatter and go elsewhere.
Alan Foreman, interviewed by Frank Vespi earlier this week, and Frank now joins us on Off to the Races. Frank, the Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority is really trying to grab the industry's upcoming future by the reins, aren't they?
Yeah, that's their mandate, Nick. As Alan alluded to in that interview, they were created by the state legislature and specifically told, look, you've got to figure out by December 1st what the sort of optimal model for racing in Maryland is, and then we'll see where we are from there. So they've got a pretty short time frame to come to some sort of resolution as to what Maryland ought to be doing in the future and bring that back to the General Assembly. And then we see what happens from there. You know, there was uncertainty referenced in the interview about what the Stronach Group wants to do going forward and what their footprint's going to look like. There's uncertainty about what the optimal model is. There's just uncertainty kind of everywhere you look right at this moment. And that is what people in the industry hope the Racetrack Operating Authority is going to start to resolve.
Yeah, a lot of expertise on that committee and, of course, a lot of heritage in Maryland racing. So great job, Frank. Good interview, very important interview for Maryland, obviously a big part of the national racing picture. Great job, Frank.
Thanks, Nick.
Appreciate it. And that's Frank Vespi interviewing Alan Foreman as Maryland's racing issues appear to be being pointed to a direction instead of sort of the scattered plans of the past. But want to bump in our next guest on Off to the Races.
Plenty of dollars. Can we get...
And For the Love of Money, that's actually the Soul Train version of the OJs. And bringing us into our handicapping segment with Derby Bill Watson. And, of course, we haven't announced it yet on this show, but earlier shows, 2 hours for Off to the Races when the meet goes live at Colonial Downs will be on from 10 to 12. There actually might be another little expansion nugget that I can share with you next week. Looking forward to disclosing that. But Derby Bill, for the love of money, why do you bring in that song into your segment?
Well, you have Ascot, you have Monmouth Park, you have Breeders' Cup Series kicking off, the prep races for the Breeders' Cup kickoff in Ascot, and they actually include Colonial Downs, the Beverly D this year, and the Breeders' Cup qualifying races, I'm saying. And it's all about money. You can ask Mr. Foreman that. Lawyers, guns, and money. It's what the world is all about.
Derby Bill joining us on Off to the Races. Let's get your thoughts on the Belmont Stakes race last weekend. You know, maybe a good question is we saw Mage in the Kentucky Derby, National Treasure in the Preakness. Arcangelo now. Forte was sort of the favorite. Angel of Empire had a good spring. Who do you think might be the best three-year-old? And what were your thoughts on the Belmont?
Yeah, we might not have seen the best three-year-old. Baffert's second string there looked pretty good on the undercard.
Arabian Lion. And then,
it's wide open. Forte looked good coming late, and Luck Be a Lady's trainer, New York, Anna Tucci, you talked to earlier. She definitely stepped foot in the picture. And hopefully, she'll come to Colonial Downs. If you offered her a bribe or anything, I appreciate it. Give her some Dairy Queen gift cards or something.
I'm sure they'll send her a condition book. I hope they do. She has never raced a horse. I did ask her that earlier in the week. She has never
I was curious. I never saw her down here. So this is a good opportunity for her to expand. You're talking about expanding racing, expanding anything, you include Derby Bill, because I'm the king of expansion since I was 18.
Yeah, well, let's expand into the stakes racing today. We'll start at Belmont Park. I know we want to get to the four big ones at Monmouth today. Just a 5-horse field in the Bed of Roses, a grade 2 for fillies and mares going 7 furlongs on the dirt. Good Night Olive is the favorite and draws the rail 6-5 for Chad Brown. Any spoilers for Chad Brown today?
Can't find one there. Dr. B's the only one that might have a hope of getting your $10 win ticket on that, but it's not a race I'm looking to bet because the favorites Good Night Olive, Wicked Halo, and Caramel Swirl. Sounds like a nice ice cream cone. But well, Caramel Swirl should have been my pick, I guess, with the ice cream connection. Not betting that race. Too many other. Monmouth has a national handicapping contest. Colonial Downs has a contest at Ellis Park today. So my focus for once is not in New York.
Handicapping for weather, handicapping for field size, handicapping for pace. Derby Bill will handicap for food on occasion. The Monmouth Park, let's start with a Pegasus there. This horse that's very familiar to us is Kings Barnes, who won the Louisiana Derby. Didn't run so well in the Derby. He's coming back rested to a mile and a 16th for trainer Todd Pletcher in this 8-horse field. I have not checked for changes since we got on the air, but expect Kings Barn to be the 8-5 morning line favorite, probably hold that status at the start of the race. A couple of challengers here. Subrogate has that Arrogate breeding that worked so well with Arcangelo in the Belmont Stakes. What do you think about the Pegasus?
Yeah, it starts off a 4-stakes card, which is pretty solid at Monmouth Park. They had showers last night, so checking the turf conditions might help you. Obviously, the greatest stretch on the shore of Jersey will be fine. It'll bake out in the sun today, and hopefully the turf track will bake out a little bit too. Two turfs and two dirts in the 4-race sequence. King's Barn, just nobody knows. Nobody knows. He's scratched. He's rested. I mean, he's got fresh legs is all I can say. But at 8-5, I'm not touching him. I'm going to try Salute the Stars here. Nick should be competitive, real competitive. And it seems to be coming into form, and I'll get you over $10 to win there. Number two is out, Moray, but I think he had a better chance at Coney Island eating a hot dog than in this race. So Moray is out of this race. It's the only scratch I have so far in that one.
Okay. Salute the Stars. That's a horse that's won on the turf and when the race got pulled off the turf at Churchill Downs. So Joel Rosario, I should say, is the jockey there. So I like that horse as well. I'm trying to figure out why Classic Catch was 3-1 in the morning line. I think that was a very generous rating for that horse as well. And how great is Nate? Is we're going to find out today. That 6-horse or 7-horse, I should say, is 6-1. That's a horse maybe to look for too. The Eatontown is at Monmouth Park today. This is the next stakes race, the 11th. For us, it features the Virginia Oaks winner from last year, Colonial Downs, Spirit and Glory, looking for only his second win since winning the Virginia Oaks, but he was trying to race against a tougher company there. The favorite, and this is a really good race. It looks like their co-favorites at 7-2 was surprisingly in Consumer Spending. Actually, Gina Romantica making her first start as in 2023 is the favorite at 3-1. What do you think about the Eatontown, a mile and a 16th on the turf?
Yeah, hopefully the turf is great. Number 7's out, Katie's Alarm, but another one that needed a Coney Island trip instead of the Monmouth trip. Surprisingly, I think and Spirit of Glory have a shot in this race out of the Virginia Oaks. Has not ran as well, but Paco Lopez pretty much is the master of Monmouth up there. He wins a lot with Shug's horse, surprisingly. Has a good chance, 7-2. Spirit of Glory is a nice price, that 15-1 there out of the Virginia Derby. So I actually like both of them in that race for the upset of Consumer Spending and Gina Romantica.
The Salvador Mile is next, a mile on the dirt, and this is for 3-year-olds and upwards. Artorias is the favorite in this 10-horse field. Riding with Biden is cross-entered at Parks. There was another one I saw that was cross-entered. Two Airgate horses in this race. What do you think about the Salvador Mile?
Yeah, Riding with Biden has slipped on something and has scratched. Not the horse, the president. But Riding with Biden is out of the race, though. He might be running at Parks instead. He's not going to run against Empty Tomb and Nimitz Class here, coming out of 8 grade 1 races in a row. This horse getting a little class relief. So I'm going with Nimitz Class here. Saw the Nimitz down at Norfolk one time. So good tie-in for Virginia there for me. Gets about $9, maybe. Maybe $8 to win. I'm taking Nimitz Class to win that one easily over Bourbonic.
Yeah, win his maybe 6th race in a row. How about the Monmouth, the Grade 3 that concludes the stakes racing portion of the card? Catnip, who won at Colonial Downs, is in this field.
Yeah, quite a move up for Catnip if he wins this one, but a nice win at Colonial Downs. Hasn't progressed as well as the owners wanted, but Commander here is a nice $12 horse. Should have no trouble with the distance. Could have run the Belmont, could run anything, but it's on turf. The Belmont Derby's on turf too, so one you might see later in the year at Colonial Downs. Commander, Speaking Scott probably, and the favorite will be Tri Hooven, but I'm always going to try to beat that horse in this race. It's a good sequence pick four if you're betting Monmouth today, which a bunch of people are. So, that and Ellis Park with your horse, Tis a Bomb, in one of the stakes races out there at Ellis Park.
Yeah, what else are you looking at? You brought up Ellis Park here. We just got a minute left here. One final thought for the show.
Yeah, it's a handicap.